Article 28 has changed considerably. The original article talks about the magistrate promoting church, basically, in every way, being good examples about going to church, supporting the ministry, assist wherever necessary, ministers, elders, and deacons, and protect them by regulations. And we are to teach and to impress upon the congregation our respect and obedience to the magistrates, which we do, and to be good examples to the folks in church, which we, by the grace of God, try to do. Article 28 has changed a lot, so that now the consistory shall take care that the churches, for the possession of their property and peace and order of their meetings, can claim the protection of the authorities. So basically, if we're hassled, or if somebody's trying to break in, or, you know, in some other way give us a hard time, we call upon the authorities, and that's pretty much it. And then, to make the point really plain, the new Article 28, or the newer Article 28, ends by saying, it should be well understood, however, that for the sake of peace and material possession, they may never suffer the royal government of Christ over his church to be in the least infringed upon. So the understanding is clearly what Kuyper would call sphere sovereignty. The church has its sphere of influence, the state has its sphere of influence, and the two ought not to interfere with each other. I think if you listen carefully, the main difference is the original Article 28 and the original understanding was church and state should have a cooperative, symbiotic relationship where the one helps the other and encourages obedience and respect for the other. Because of the multicultural, pluralistic society we're in now, even in the Christian church, the fragments and divisions, who does the church support? In what way do they support? Does that support mean discrimination against some other belief? And it gets extremely complicated. So that basically we've gone pragmatic and said the state is there to help us against bad guys, and the state cannot infringe in any way upon the church. Now, it's not saying there's anything wrong with the new Article 20 and what it says, but it is a sad thing to realize that we've come a long way since the days of, you know, theocratic government under David and Solomon and people like that, where church and state were almost indistinguishable.
Well, actually, I have a note here that the original Latin speaks of the magistrate as the Christian magistrate.
Mm. Well, it has it here in the English, too. The office of the Christian magistrate.
Yeah.
So that was an assumption.
So really, if we were to take Article 28 ideally and understand a responsible Christian magistrate, we'd be, of course, we would be promoting their authority mm-hmm. in their proper sphere. And, of course, they should be promoting the church's authority in its proper sphere.
Mm-hmm.
And so, really, we wouldn't have a problem with the...
No.
Original.
No, I don't have a problem with it, neither the article in the Belgian Confession. The difficulty is the implementation of it today, especially on the magistrate side, mm-hmm. since there are so many variations of Christianity and other religions. Yeah, and then you run into the First Amendment of our Constitution. That really makes things complicated, because by law they're not supposed to do what this article is saying they should do.
Yeah.
So that gets really sad.
As a Christian magistrate, they would uphold the commandments of God.
Yeah.
An unchristian magistrate, they make countermeasures to the law of God. In which case, if the Christians order to countermeasure the law of God, then he would obey God rather than that.
Right. It's a good point.
Can you read that last part again of the new one?
Sure. Bring it up here. For the sake of peace and material possession, the church may never suffer the royal government of Christ over his church to be in the least infringed upon.
Yes.
So in other words, you cannot, for the sake of safety and peace in the church, sell the church to the state, more or less.
Yeah, well, I was looking at the in the least bit infringed upon. That's
mm-hmm.
pretty strong words.
Mm-hmm. Whereas formerly, it was welcome.
Yeah.
But this is where Richard Wurmbrand stands up and says, no, we can't back this government
mm-hmm.
for what they're doing.
Yeah. So it's. I think we look at it as a principle that's biblical. I think we pray God for wisdom to implement the principle as much as we can under the circumstances in which we find ourselves. Again, just a timely reminder that Romans 13 was written at a time when the government in charge was no prize. It wasn't Christian. It wasn't.
So that last sentence doesn't mean we can take up arms?
Well, it doesn't actually address that at all. It's simply saying you can't negotiate for the sake of peace the sovereignty of the church. In other words, we can't sell out to the state.
Yeah, when they come and ask you to preach that homosexuality is okay, we as a church body have to stand up and say no.
And right now, if you're following what's happening, there's a big to-do with this contraception implementation, but it's only affecting 501c3 churches.
Yep. So I am fully on board with not.
Yeah, because basically, if you're going to pay the piper, you got to play to his tune. If you're going to be part of that system, you have to be under the regulations of that system. So, you know, I think, the Obama administration basically mandated that all institutions involving healthcare, the original mandate was have to provide contraception and or, what was the fancy term? Family planning services, a.k.a. abortion referrals, to their employees, upon which zillions of religious institutions that formerly had a pass on that kind of stuff made a big to-do. So they said, oh, fine, we'll just mandate the insurance companies to do it, so you guys don't have to do it.
So now you have to pay
for people to do that. So it's a big issue right now, and it's not going away anytime soon. The compromise, so-called compromise, didn't go over real well with the religious institutions. So that's an ongoing issue, but it's a good example of how things have turned sour. Article 29 is a new section of the church order. It's called the second head. The first primarily involved office bearers and the organization of the church. Now we're talking about assemblies. We should try to train ourselves. This isn't part of the church order. This is just a little side note. We should try to train ourselves into using expressions like broader assemblies, not higher assemblies. The Episcopal church government structure is top down, so the higher assemblies rule over the local churches. We are part of a Presbyterian form of church government, so we don't have higher and lower. We have broader assemblies, meaning we're on the same plane as synod is. Synod is simply a delegation from each of the churches coming together for mutual edification. Which is why, by the way, one of the questions in the church visitation list is a little bit squeamish, where it says, do you abide by the decisions of synod? Well, we do, but not of necessity. And that's a big debate that's waiting to happen, yes.
The thing that helped me too about synod is that they're only a ruling body in matters before them during their time of deliberation.
Right, they don't exist when they're not in session.
So then what happens is upon those rulings and upon concurrence and subscription to those things, the council would then implement them.
But the rub comes in when you don't agree. And then what do you do, and how does that work? And the proper way of dealing with disagreements is to appeal a decision of synod to synod. But theoretically, nothing should arrive at synod that doesn't come from the local church. You can't initiate an action at synod that didn't exist in a local church. Now, that doesn't solve the problem, but it makes it a lot better. Anyway, Article 29, four kinds of ecclesiastical assemblies shall be maintained, I would add when possible. Consistory, which is our council meetings, the classis, which is a regional group of churches, the particular synod, in a country that's larger with many churches, you will have larger regional gatherings of classis. And then the General Synod, which would be analogous to the General Assembly of a Presbyterian denomination, that's nationwide. In our case, it would be continent-wide meetings. Any questions about those?
No, I just have a comment, we had had a discussion in the family visit about the possibility of a generally reformed council, like the old councils in Nicaea and things, if there was ever a possibility.
Oh, that way.
And that would be something everybody would subscribe to within their various denominations, possibly. I mean, I'm not saying...
It's definitely a possibility. It's definitely a possibility. Right. I think these, by the word shall be maintained, mean these would be regularly scheduled meetings. A council is usually not that. You usually have those for particular issues and circumstances. So even though that is acknowledged by the church, it wouldn't be part of the church order because it's not a regularly stated meeting, whereas these would be. Any questions on 29? It's fairly straightforward. Article 30. In these assemblies, ecclesiastical matters only shall be transacted, and that in an ecclesiastical manner. So in other words, it isn't for any old thing. It has to do with the business of the church, and the agendas have to be confined to that. So the churches need to be observant that things don't creep onto the agenda that really aren't matters that the church ought to be dealing with. And that typically happens. I don't recall ever seeing something getting jettisoned from an agenda because it wasn't an ecclesiastical matter. The ecclesiastical manner means, for example, I can't wake up tomorrow, decide I want a point on the synod agenda, call up Pastor Overbeek and say, put this on the agenda. Cannot do. You have to use the proper steps. So if a member wants to put a point on the agenda of synod, first of all, it has to be shown that it should be there. It shouldn't be first dealt with at the local level. But then it has to be forwarded by us to synod to get it on the agenda. This way you avoid all kinds of disorder and such. So that's what that means, ecclesiastical manner. In major assemblies, only such matter... Oh, by the way, having said that, let's just say a member has an issue and we vote against their position. We cannot not forward their appeal to synod. So even though we think they're totally wrong, we've ruled against it locally, we have no right to not allow the appeal to go through, even if we disagree with it. Now, synod will ask what's been done with the issue, how's it been handled, what's the consistory's position and why, and the person can actually show up in person and be given by the chairman speaking rights on the floor to articulate their position. But we can't, because we don't agree with somebody, bottle them up at a local level. Michael?
As a for instance, if this discussion of a term of being given privileges becomes
right.
a more general topic amongst the churches,
right.
then there could be a consistory by consistory ruling and then a synodical ruling. Possible and something like that as far as the protocol?
Well, what happens is, I've seen Synod do one of two things. There have been overtures like that about a variety of different issues. Mm-hmm. Synod often chooses not to make a binding ruling for the churches if they deem that it's the kind of thing that should be handled better by the local church. That's been the growing trend, not to do that. Even if we all agree on the issue, because there's a bit of hesitancy to add to the three forms of unity another body of beliefs. So there have been rulings, and those have been recorded. We have a document ongoing that shows the articles of the church order and anything that's been ruled pertaining to that article. So you can see a history of how it's been implemented. But there's been extreme reluctance to make broad edicts about anything.
I think that's wise.
Well, in most cases, it is. It's going to happen again this Synod. I just took a glance at the Synod agenda. Third time around on a certain issue, brought up in a different wording, I could almost predict the outcome. But that's how that generally works. Okay, Article 30, the last one for this morning. Now let's continue. In major assemblies, halfway through the article, in major assemblies, only such matters shall be dealt with as could not be finished in minor assemblies, or as such as pertain to the churches of the major assembly in common. So what I mentioned before, if it hasn't been dealt with locally, it cannot be dealt with at synod. unless it's an item that really doesn't pertain to the local church per se, such as mission work, seminary, the stuff that we corporately support and don't own, so to speak, as an individual church. Questions on that? That's pretty straightforward stuff. Okay, thank you.